Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Abundant Thinking. Today, we are going to be talking to Mike Yerso. Mike is a mental performance coach who has served over 150 clients in his program. He's extremely smart in his field and thinks from an amazing point of view. In this episode, we talk about what a mental performance coach is, motivation, self-belief, confidence, discipline, and much, much more. Make sure you hit that follow button and the notification so you never miss another episode. Thank you so much and enjoy the rest of this episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Abundant Thinking. Today, we have a very special guest on. Mike, say hello.
Hey, what's going on, everyone?
So, we already learned about Mike. We already know a little bit about him. The first question that I'm going to get into is kind of going into the fact of what is a mental performance coach?
Great question. So, because a lot of people ask me this when they ask me, what do you do? I'm not a business coach, so there's that. Generally, how I would answer that is a mental performance coach, if you need help with figuring out what to do, like you're not sure what it is you need to do, you probably need a business coach or a strategy coach. If you know what to do and you're not doing it, you're not taking action on it, there's something blocking you from doing that thing you know you should be doing, you probably need a mental performance coach. And so that's the type of people that would work with me, are people that are feeling blocked. They're feeling like they're underperforming in some way. They're not reaching their full potential because they just feel like there's something standing in the way. It could be a limiting belief. It could be feelings of inadequacy, self-doubt, feeling like they're not good enough. A mental performance coach helps people work through some of those blocks and gets people on a path of taking action so that they can actually start getting the results that they know that they're capable of.
Yeah, absolutely amazing answer. I love that. I think a lot of people could definitely benefit from one, because I think a problem that I see a lot of people have, especially around the area that, you know, I have my podcast around, kind of, you know, mental health and just being able to improve yourself overall. I think people have a distaste for this sector because they think it doesn't work. You know, I think sometimes people think that this topic is over talked about and they don't, I guess you can say, appreciate the importance of it. So I think your line of work is extremely important and something that in the future can get a lot more popular and has a lot more, it can be very valuable, if that makes sense. Is there anything specific that made you want to be a mental performance coach, or kind of just happen?
Yeah. So, I mean, it did happen organically, I would say. I've been working in the fitness field. I've been a personal trainer and a fitness coach for the past 14 years. But even prior to that, I had this fascination with human psychology and human behavior, and really trying to understand why people do what they do. I came from a divorced household when I was a kid where, you know, I lived with my mom. Didn't have, you know, the type of relationship with my dad like I did with my mom. And so always was wondering about, why are people the way they are? Why are they do what they do, even from a very early age? And so I always was a quiet kid sitting back, watching, observing, interested in, you know, why people overreact with their emotions. And so why do I feel the way I do? Always just this kind of, I would say, insatiable kind of desire to want to figure out like why humans are the way they are and why they make decisions the way they are and why some make good choices and why some people have a life of really bad choices and they just can't get past some of these things. So there's always been that. And I think when I got into fitness, what really happened was I realized that just focusing on the physical aspect of people's lives was just not enough to create the type of transformation and impact that I wanted in people's lives. I think that the fitness side of things was great and you can make wonderful transformations with people through that avenue. But I also found when I was training people that people would relapse on bad behaviors. They couldn't, they'd work out, but then they would self-sabotage and, you know, not be able to really get to their fitness goals because there was other stuff going on in the background that I didn't really have control over. So I wanted to really go deeper with some of those clients. And so what I did was I ended up studying neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, and also hypnosis. And from there, I was able to really get into understanding how the unconscious mind works, how the unconscious and subconscious, I'll use those interchangeably, those aspects of a person, no matter how much conscious change that they want to create in their life, that subconscious part of them is controlling the show for the most part. And so learning how to control that aspect of things was really what gave me the desire to want to be a more of a mental performance coach, help people create goals, help them move past these blocks, and then create more high performance, sustainable habits so that they can continue to make progress. And that's essentially what kind of led me to this path. And you know, beyond fitness, when you impact people's lives in all of these different avenues, especially the mental side of things, because it's the mind that drives the body, you can create some pretty amazing results with people, and people's lives get better. They become better leaders, better husbands, better mothers, better bosses. You know, they make more money. They support more people. So really it's been a great path for me to start impacting people in a more positive way.
Yeah, very cool. I agree with everything you said. One of the things that I wanted to add on to that is I think overall, obviously I'm a lot younger, I'm 19 years old, but over my time trying to improve myself, I feel like I've always been a very like logical person. When I want solutions to something, I try to find like, okay, if I do this, then I get this, right? And I think that in trying to improve myself, I was able to kind of see places where I was lacking in. So before, I used to not be too disciplined, for example, we'll say, and I was able to change that by kind of pinpointing the problem and then finding like a solution. So kind of like if X, then Y, if that makes sense, right? Because I think sometimes people can overcomplicate doing certain things. So just being able to do one thing to get another thing out is also, in my opinion, and from my experience, something that's extremely important to know. And I remember seeing on one of your Instagram posts, you had, it was called the formula for discipline. Could you talk about that?
Yeah. So formula for discipline, I believe it comes from, Stephen Bartlett. He has a Diary of a CEO podcast. He wrote a book called Diary of a CEO. The basis of it is that, you know, there has to be like a strong desire for that thing that you want to achieve, and there's going to be friction that gets in the way. And so the stronger the desire you have to fulfill whatever it is that you want, and the less amount of friction that's available or that's creating resistance for you to move forward with that, the more discipline you can have. And so when we think about how do we increase, I would say, like, you know, if we want to increase our discipline and increase our outcomes towards our goals, what you want to do is decrease that friction or decrease that resistance and increase your desire and that the strength of that goal that you're trying to achieve. One of the ways, so like what we're talking about is you want to feel like high level of motivation. If you're feeling super highly motivated and there is a little, like a small amount of friction, it's going to be much easier to have that discipline to show up and do it every day. For example, if I'm training to do, let's say, a marathon, and I know that I have to get out there and run 10 miles, well, how badly do I want that marathon? Did I sign up because I'm doing it with a friend? Was it my idea? Is it something I personally want to challenge myself with? Like, how strong is my motivation to complete that task? And also, what's the friction? Is it raining outside? Is it beautifully and sunny? If it's beautiful and sunny outside, less friction, the likelihood that I have that discipline to go out and do that is super high. But if it's raining, you know, and I'm going to get wet and it's just going to be cold, miserable conditions, there's more friction, there's more resistance for me to go out and do that thing. So I need more discipline in that case. So how I look at it is, you have to increase the likelihood of like achievement of that goal that you have, and you have to decrease the friction. And there's a couple ways to do that. You can, what I like to do to increase motivation and desire to achieve something is to visualize it. is to picture myself completing that task. So in the case of the running, for example, if you're lacking discipline to go out and run and you want to increase that, what I would do is I would picture myself, you know, if I'm, I would sit there, take a few minutes, imagine myself completing that marathon, imagine how good it feels, see the people who are giving me the credit and the acknowledgement that I went through it and recognizing the training I went through, and actually just see myself with that medal that they place around you, see myself looking at the time and, you know, completing it and going through the ribbon or whatever it is. And feeling those feelings that I'm going to get from the end result. And that's going to boost my motivation, but then also decreasing the friction. Maybe I chop it down into smaller steps. Maybe I don't do a full run that I was going to that day. Maybe I do a lesser run, or maybe I run a slower pace, or in some way decrease the friction that's there. And so you can create that inverse effect, whereas you can increase the motivation and decrease the friction, or you can do one or the other. Just increase your motivation, and that may be enough for you to push past whatever friction there is. And so that's kind of the approach I take with something like that. And it is a very logical kind of like formula when you look at it that way. Some people are just, you know, they just want to let emotion drive things. And I think that's great, because emotion is one of the most powerful drivers of action. I mean, emotion, energy in motion, right? That's what emotion is it drives us to do things. So I think that's the best driver, visualization process, seeing that process come to life and the completion of it, how good you're going to feel, who it's benefiting, all that stuff. And that's usually enough to get people through whatever kind of friction that's in front of them.
That was very interesting. Yeah, I made an episode, my last episode actually was about visualization, and after doing research on it, I realized how important it is. And I guess just overall, I never really thought about it like that until I started, you know, kind of looking into it, because I feel like in the past I definitely have unintentionally used visualization to get me through things, kind of like seeing the end result, seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, if that makes sense, and being able to know that eventually it's going to be over. I wanted to ask, as far as you said to try to limit the friction, so in your example, are you saying chunk it up into small pieces? Like, you can make it less than your goal as long as you just get it done, as far as like consistency goes? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. So I'll bring in a concept from, there's a great book. Actually, I have it sitting right here. It's called Tiny Habits. It's by BJ Fogg. So he's a PhD researcher, the University of Stanford. If you've ever heard of the book, The Power of Habit, James Clear. So I have another one right here. Atomic Habits by James Clear. Two other books. Tiny Habits, BJ Fogg is the guy that's done all of the research. So he's the founder of Stanford's Behavior Design Lab. And what he talks about is there's this formula called B equals MAP. B being the behavior, equals the motivation. See, the motivation, you have essentially like an action line, and you also have your, we'll call it like your, the challenge or the friction in a way. And so what he's saying is like the higher motivation you have, it doesn't matter the level of friction. If you have really high motivation to do something, you can, you know, walk through walls no matter how hard it is. You're going to like if I really want to write a book or write a post, and it's like something that is just like, it's coming out of me, it doesn't matter the amount of friction I'm feeling or what odds are against me, I'm going to make that happen. But if I have very low motivation to do something, and that task is also super difficult to do, the likelihood that I actually take action on it is super low. So in what he's saying with tiny habits is you have to chunk up. If you have very low motivation for something, you have to chunk it up into smaller bits, make it easier to do in certain ways. So, you know, maybe it's writing down your idea first and foremost before you even research it, whatever it is, like doing the very first step. And then going back to what you were talking about, the visualization process, what I actually like to do, I use like kind of a multifaceted approach with visualization, where I actually, before I see myself doing the end result, I picture myself doing, and I coach this to clients as well, I picture going through those steps, what's the first step I need to take? See myself completing that step and feeling good, making that progress. Okay, then what's the next step I have to take? And you're running through this in your mind really quickly, but you're taking yourself through the steps. And when you do that, it becomes less daunting. But I find that if something is very difficult, like let's say I have to do an 8-mile run, maybe I can just, back off a little bit, or maybe I can break it up into two different runs that day, or maybe, there's something I can do that's even easier than that. Maybe I just go out and do 2 miles because that's what I can do. And that in a way sustains the habit. It sustains the ability to keep doing the thing. You didn't do the full bit that you were trying to do, but you did something, and that helps you maintain the standard, the integrity, the identity of you being that type of person that does that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. I really like how you mentioned that the motivation is kind of, I guess you could say, the bigger part, because I never thought about it like that. And it does make a lot of sense. I guess looking back at it in the past, when I've had a motivation to do something, you're right, it doesn't really matter what's in my way. You kind of just find a way to get through. And something that I talk a lot about on this podcast is kind of confidence and just being able to, like, I guess in a way have belief in yourself, because I think a lot of people nowadays don't want to get started on something or just don't do certain things because they don't, like, they feel like they need confidence for them. And I know in one of your posts you talked about, increasing your self-belief. So could you talk a little bit about that? What are your opinions on that? How do you think people can increase their confidence overall?
Yeah, confidence is one of those things where there's some people that they'll say, well, I'll do that thing, I'll go for that run, I'll start creating content when I feel confident. And they're waiting for the confidence first to get them to do the thing. And it's a faulty approach, because that's not how confidence works. Confidence is a byproduct of successful action. So what I mean by that is there needs to be a level of competency with what you're doing in order to feel confident. Confidence is just not just something that you wake up and you feel and then you go and do that thing. Confidence is an end result. It's accumulated over time by taking action. And what I would say is this: there's a great concept from Dan Sullivan. He runs Strategic Coach. He's probably coached the most successful entrepreneurs on the planet over the last 20, 30 years. He's part of the Genius Network. And he has the 4 C's, which he talks about. And I love this. And basically what he says is the only way to have confidence is through capability. When you develop the capabilities to do something, you can have confidence in it. The only way to have the capability and confidence is you don't wake up with it. You have to make a commitment to start taking action on whatever that thing is. So, I mean, I work with a lot of like people who struggle to create content online, for example, and that's like, they know what to do. Like I said, they hire me because they know what to do, but they're just not doing it. They don't need a social media manager. They need more action to get stuff out there, to start building their following and start connecting with people. And so a lot of times, what they're lacking is this essentially like commitment. And commitment is number one. You have to commit to creating a standard for yourself. You have to commit to, this is how many days a week I'm going to post. You have to commit to, this is how many days a week I'm going to go to the gym, I'm going to run. Then once you make that commitment, you also have to understand that if it's a new standard you're creating for yourself, it's something new, because making a commitment to something you've never done before, you have to have some sort of courage. And I don't mean courage like pulling a car off of like a child that's trapped under. What I mean by courage is those little battles every day where you are experiencing some friction. You're experiencing some resistance to holding that standard of going to the gym when you don't want to because you're tired, or creating that piece of content because you're worried about what someone's going to see, or they're going to be feeling inadequate because they don't feel good enough yet. You have to have the courage in that moment that goes with the commitment. And then once you've kind of made that commitment and you've continued to develop that courage and move forward in the face of that courage, you then develop the capabilities, because now you're holding your standard and you're getting more evidence. You're building more evidence over time. When you have evidence, you become more capable. And when you have undeniable evidence that you can look back that you've done something, you now can have a high level of confidence about it. And when you've had confidence, this whole cycle repeats itself. When you have confidence, now you loop back to making a larger commitment, having more courage that you have to take on, you know, again, developing even more capabilities, more confidence, more commitment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that cycle can just continue on. But it's a good framework to look at of like, confidence and capabilities don't just happen. You have to have a commitment to a standard you're going to hold yourself to. You have to have courage when things get hard so you can develop the capabilities, and then confidence will come as a result of all that.
Yeah, and I think to add on to that, something I mention a lot, and I think I like drill it into everybody's heads, they're getting kind of annoyed, but it's the fact that you need to build proof within yourself that you're able to do the things that you want to, exactly what you just said. And I remember, I think Joe Rogan said this, I heard a while back, and he said that the action of confidence comes before the actual, you know, result and the feeling of it. Yeah, he said action before the feeling. And I remember that was a huge mind shift for me, because everybody used to tell me, it's like, okay, you're born with confidence, you know? And then when I saw this and thought about it, I'm like, wait, there's no way. Like, well, how could this happen? Because I thought this is something I'm born with, etc. And something that was really hard for me that I had to deal with, especially on this podcast, is I really wanted it to be my own thing. But then I knew that I needed to start posting on social media, which means like people from my high school, everybody I knew would start seeing it. And it taught me so much. And I think once you kind of get over that like fence where you're like, I don't want to do it, you kind of just fully commit, you see that it's not so bad on the other side. I think a lot of people have, they feel that people that are confident, they're a little bit cynical and negative towards people that are confident, because they're like, oh, he's so lucky, you know, he did this and he was born this way. But in reality, it's like a never ending battle. You know, I'll go to the gym, and if I'm on my 8th rep and I'm trying to get to 12 and I'm about to give up, I'm like, no, because if I give up right now, I'm going to remember this for the rest of my day, and it's going to make it so much harder for me. So people think it's a lot easier than it actually is, but it's so worth it, and such an important skill to have if you want to achieve pretty much anything, in my opinion. Because if you're confident in something, you know that you can do it. And even if you don't know you can do a certain thing, you'll think to yourself that, okay, I've done something similar in the past, so I'm going to give this a try. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And can I add something too right there too? Because confidence is one of those things, right, where confidence is like, it's self-belief, right? It's this like high level of self-belief. And confidence can be a transferable source of energy. Like, I look at confidence as, let's take for example, you know, we've all been in those situations where you're at you know, you're out dancing, or you're going to a prom, you're going to, you know, the club, wherever, and you're out and there's like nobody out there on the dance floor yet, or you're at a wedding and, you know, they're playing the music and nobody's out there on the dance floor. Nobody wants to be that person, that first person out there who everyone's staring at, because we don't want all of the eyes on us. But there's that one person that is super confident, has total self-belief, doesn't care what anybody thinks, and they go out there and they just start dancing. And that person showing that confidence and self-belief gives other people permission to feel that way too. And so confidence in a way can give other people permission to feel more confidence in themselves, to take that step and that action. And so that's something that gets overlooked. But I look at that in terms of, and especially when I'm coaching clients, if I'm going to ask my clients to ask something of them, ask them to push through challenge, to take on more, to reach for new levels, I have to be willing to put myself through that too. And if I'm being an example of that, if I'm showing them proof that, hey, I've gone and done this thing, I've been in the gym 5 days a week, I do meditation every single morning, I do neurofeedback, I train my brain, I do all of these things, and I have undeniable proof of that, because whether I'm showing it on social media or I can speak about it with a level of self-belief and confidence because I'm congruent with what I want, that instills confidence in them. And that self-belief that comes through when I'm talking about it, when I'm acting upon it, and those people seeing that actually can help them gain more confidence in themselves, because now they're it's like they're getting permission to do this thing that they've wanted to do, because they're feeling it from me. They're feeling the undeniable belief that I have in myself, and it's giving them permission. So that's one kind of like overlooked quality of confidence and self-belief, is it gives other people permission to have more confidence and step up to the plate in certain ways.
Yeah, 100%. And I think on top of you talking about giving permission to other people, I think as an individual, if you get something done and you have confidence in yourself and you know that you achieved something, it really doesn't matter kind of shifting like towards other people's opinions, because I think that's a barrier a lot of people have. It really doesn't matter what other people think if you know that you've done something. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with the imposter syndrome at all, but essentially, I think when you have confidence and you do something, you don't need other people's approval. So if I gave an example a couple episodes that if you were to work at Starbucks, for example, right? And for 3 hours, you sat in the back and you were just on your phone doing nothing. And then you come out for 1 minute and then some person's in there and he says, wow, you're working hard, right? He thinks that you're working hard, but deep down, you know that you just sat in the back for 3 hours, right? Whether it's a big deal for you or not, doesn't matter. But if it was the other way around, if you just worked for 3 hours and then, you know, somebody catches you on your phone or something, you take a 1 minute break and somebody says to you, not working hard or hardly working, you know, they're joking. But at the same time, you know that you just did that. It doesn't really matter what anybody else thinks. And that's something really important to know, because once you kind of, it's like a snowball effect. You kind of get the ball rolling. Once you do one thing, you kind of keep getting consistent, and over time, you just get more and more confident. And I don't know if this is something you see a lot as a mental performance coach, but is there anything in particular that you think like is a very common problem for people to run into, like overall, not even on confidence? Like, what do you think is the most common problem that people have?
Yeah, I mean, overarchingly, there's the way to say it would be like feelings of inadequacy. Like, so for example, I'm not enough, which is a form of imposter, or imposter syndrome is a form of that. In a way, it's like, I'm not going to go and do this thing again until I have all the pieces, or until I have the perfect method or the perfect piece of content, or, you know, the perfect structure to the podcast. Like, you know, I need to have everything in place. Or they start comparing themselves to what other people are doing, right? If you were to sit here and like build a podcast based on what Joe Rogan's doing, I mean, you're not going to feel very good about yourself, because like he's been doing it for a long time. He has this undeniable evidence. He has, you know, people from all walks of life, some of the most famous people we can imagine, he sits down and has conversations with. So like, of course you're going to feel bad. And so one of the things I try to think about here is, and how do you, you know, I guess the question is then like, how do you help people through feelings of inadequacy? Because one of the biggest things is, well, inadequacy is tied to somebody's identity. It's tied to like their self-concept or identity. Like, how do they feel about themselves? And a lot of people have what's called like low self-worth. They don't feel good enough. They don't feel good enough to go for that job. They don't feel good enough to start posting content online, because there's going to be, you know, people critiquing them, or they're going to be under a microscope. They don't feel good enough to, you know, for that next promotion, and they feel like they're not going to be able to hold the, you know, the requirements for that position that they're getting promoted to. So they feel fear with that. So these feelings of inadequacy are something that they make us human, and I think they're okay. I think the problem is when we entertain them and we allow them to hold us back, as opposed to looking at them as a positive thing. I just had a call with a client just a few moments ago, and we talked about self-doubt. And I said he was experiencing self-doubt because he's trying to take himself to the next level. He's trying to earn another, you know, he's trying to go from like, let's say 10K to like 20K in his business. And in order for him to do that, he's got to commit to a level of standards that, you know, how he's posting, how he's connecting with clients, the level of service he's providing to people has to level up, because the 20,000 version of him is inevitably going to be a bigger, more powerful, more productive, more self-believing person than the 10K version of him. And so the problem is there's self-doubt, because the cycle of who he's been up until this point, if he looks back in his past, all he sees is all of these cycles of doing good and then not doing good and doing good and not doing good. So he's keeping this kind of like record of this past that's driving this thought of who he believes himself, which is this person who's not going to be. And so he's having this self-doubt about moving to the next level. And I said to him, is self-doubt a good or a bad thing? Is it a good emotion or bad emotion? He said, well, it's not a good thing. And I was like, well, that's not true. It's neither good nor bad, actually. What it is, though, and I'll bring this back, it's by saying life and circumstances, all it's doing for you is showing you a mirror of where you haven't resolved something yet. So if it's self-doubt is what it is, it's information. It's not necessarily good or bad. It's when we entertain it and we allow it to say, because of my past, I'm now a person who can't be consistent. And so now I'm having self-doubt as a result of that. And that's bad. You can say that, or you can say, I have this self-doubt because I've been inconsistent in the past. But what it's showing me is that I need to maintain a level of standards because the inconsistency hasn't worked up until this point. So there's kind of like, you start with the emotion, you acknowledge the emotion, because what I like to think of is all emotions have a positive intention behind them. They're for safety, they're for protection in some way. And so that self-doubt, those feelings of inadequacy, sometimes they're just protecting you. They're trying to keep you from, you know, overinflating your ego in some way, taking a risk that is maybe too big for your current level of skill right now. And so it's okay that they're there. It's just when we entertain them and we allow them to consume us, a lot of times what they do is they stop us from taking action, or they just drop us back into that inconsistent cycle that we've been into up at that point. And so acknowledging those emotions, use them as a tool. Like, look at self-doubt and say, it's here because it's keeping me in check. It's letting me know that this is something bigger. I'm playing a bigger hand than I ever have before. And so if I'm not feeling self-doubt, then I must be doing something wrong. Like, you know, if I'm not feeling fear about something, do I actually really care about it? Because if I was just moving forward with confidence in it, there's no stakes really, you know, there's nothing to really be afraid of. So that fear, that inadequacy, it's actually like a compass to show you that you're actually headed in a direction of growth. And I think by reframing it to that, could give people a different lens to kind of look at it through. And when you look at it from a different lens, you can take a different approach. And take a different approach, you can get a different result.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like the way you said the reframe. And I think that's something very important, definitely something I can implement in my life as well. I think sometimes I have a tendency to be kind of picky and choosy. So if I'm having a good emotion, I kind of make the most out of it. But sometimes if I'm like, you know, I think when I get nervous, I definitely am able to reframe it and be like, this is something I care about. But then something like, maybe if something upsets me, I'm not able to reframe it. So that's cool that you bring it up, because that's something I definitely got to implement in my life. If you could suggest one thing for people to focus on, kind of like as a category, like just one, just to begin, what would it be? Like, you know, discipline, self-belief, consistency, etc. Do you have one?
Clarity. Clarity, establishing clarity. What I mean by that is, there's not a lot of cabs anymore. It's now Ubers. But like, let's say, for example, I was in New York City and I was getting in a cab, and I walked in the cab and the cab said, okay, where are we headed? And I was like, well, I don't want to go to Rockefeller Center. He'd be like, okay, that's weird, but okay, well, where do you want to go? And I was like, well, I don't want to go to Central Park. And he'd be like, well, dude, we're not going anywhere. We're not going to move until you tell me where you want to go. And I use that metaphor a lot with clients, because there's so many people that know where they don't want to go, or what they're tired of, or what they're sick of in their life, but they don't know what they would like instead. They don't have any clarity on what the alternative is of the situation they're currently in. So unless you establish some sort of clarity and direction on what it is you want to move towards, there's no movement that you can actually take that starts allowing you to sense a feeling of progress towards that thing. So I remember, I'll never forget, well, years ago, probably like 8 years ago now or so at this point, I had this client. She's like, I want to lose 50 pounds. I'm just sick and tired of feeling how I feel. I have no energy. I have no, and then I said, well, what's the weight you want to be? Or what would that be like for you when you're, you know, and when you're 50 pounds less. And she's like, well, I'm just tired of being like I am. And she just kept going on, like, she was so sick of this. I was like, all right, stop. I was like, until you give me an idea of what it is you want to accomplish, what that looks like, what you're going to feel, how you're going to know when you've achieved it, there is no way that I'm going to be able to help you towards this goal, because I have no idea what you want. You can't not do something or try to avoid something. That's not a goal, right? That's like, and so there's so many people who are lacking that sense of clarity. And sometimes what I'm simply going to ask them in those moments when they're lacking clarity is, what specifically do you want? Like, that's it. Like, what specifically do you want? Because people will tell you what they don't want. It's very easy to know the crappy situation you've been stuck in. But to know what you actually want instead is a harder question. A lot of people haven't thought about that because they're just ruminating in the garbage state that they're in right now. And so that's where I start. I think that's one of the most important things. You don't need motivation. You don't need action. None of that matters until you actually have a clear, established sense of what it is you actually want to achieve, accomplish, you know, hit for a goal.
Yeah, absolutely amazing answer. Clarity is something I don't think I've ever heard that answer. And that's that's very smart. I really like that analogy, by the way. I don't know if that was you who thought of it, but absolutely amazing.
I definitely Mike, stole it from an NLP coach.
You know what? Whatever works. I feel like every time you hear a quote, somebody got it from somebody and that person got it from somebody else. You know, it's like, it's like a little loop. Mike, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on. Where can people find you? Social media, anything? Give it a shout out.
Yeah, best places on social media. I'm at Coach Mike Urso. Last name is spelled URSO. And that's best place people can connect with me. I share a lot there. You know, my coaching works via invite and referral based primarily. But I always entertain a conversation if somebody's interested. And at the very least, go check out, you know, what I post. It's, you know, pretty useful.
Yeah, again, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. I had a great time. Great answers. Yeah, for anybody listening to this, please check him out. Super nice guy. I had a great conversation with him. And maybe have you on another time.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you.
Of course.